When the pandemic first hit Australia back in March, the Northern Territory was quick to close their borders to protect vulnerable Indigenous communities. And so far, it's worked. On the other side of the world, Indigenous communities in the Amazon haven't been as fortunate. In early April, a 15-year-old boy from a remote region in the Brazilian Amazon, home to the Yanomami people, died of COVID-19. And now there are fears without adequate protection, entire Amazonian tribes could be eradicated. For more, I'm joined by Associate Professor Nina Moller from Coventry University. She's been working with remote Amazonian communities through Ecuador and Peru, and she joins me now from the UK. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Patricia.
I know you've been
working
on this for more than 15 years. When the pandemic broke out, was there any warning to the Indigenous people of the Amazon from the government or local organisations that this was coming?
Well, warning from governments was slow or maybe even non-existent. Indigenous communities are not generally a priority. So, as so often, Indigenous federations took matters into their own hands, really. And they launched their own campaigns to warn people of the pandemic and to mitigate it. They distributed information via social media and forest radio networks.
How remote are we talking about here? How difficult is it to reach some of these communities?
So there's a whole variety of experiences in the Amazon. There are over 400 different Indigenous nationalities in the Amazon still today, and their lives really vary a lot, both between the different ethnic groups and within them. So some communities live deep in the forest, far away from roads and industry, and others live fully fledged urban lives. So some communities will have access to internet, and some will be literally many canoe days away from a phone or even a radio, and let alone a health center, of course. So it's not easy. And on top of that, there is still probably some 60 uncontacted groups living in the forest. And these are groups that have had no contact whatsoever or almost no contact with foreigners, with outsiders, except for the miners and illegal loggers that invade their territory and that they are in conflict with. And then to make matters even more complex, there are also many displaced and landless Indigenous people that live in really precarious conditions in urban areas. And they're also really difficult to reach simply because of their extreme societal exclusion.
So when this did hit, how prepared were they? You say they took matters in their own hands. They tried to warn communities, but how effective was that?
Information getting there is one thing, but getting people to take it serious is a whole other issue. And so on top of that, the overall health of Indigenous Amazonians for years already, for decades, has been heavily impacted by contamination from oil extraction and from mining, and also from logging activities. So it's a huge problem across the Amazons, with polluted rivers and community health collapsing. So how prepared can you be under these circumstances anyway? I don't know. But in some of the communities that I know personally, people have been making and sharing plant medicines since they first became aware of the pandemic as a way to mitigate it.
Do you think native Amazonians are particularly vulnerable to this? How big is the threat now?
Because of their social, economic and environmental conditions, yes, I think they are particularly vulnerable, yes. Malnutrition, pollution, pre-existing poor health, these are the sorts of things that we know most people suffer from across the world. And from poverty comes poor health, and from poor health comes higher risk. And so, yes, Amazonians and other Indigenous peoples are particularly vulnerable to COVID, but this is a matter of social and environmental justice, not one of genetics.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much, Patricia.
That's Associate Professor Nina Moller from Coventry University.